You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of October 10th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on the first weekend of the playoffs in NPB is my partner, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud? Good to hear from you.
I'm ripping and roaring and raring to go, which is sort of like the last week. I think it was sort of like Fear the Walking Dead.
We always do.
Yeah,
you don't have to. That's something you don't have to tell us.
Yeah, well, I wasn't certain if I was being pursued by one or I was one. It was in that vague kind of jet lag, zombie land kind of thing. But I feel good this week, and I've got rest and. You know, I had rest and physical therapy and all those other good things. So I'm good. Yourself?
Excellent. I'm doing okay. I'm a little sleepy. I've got your jet lag, and for no reason other than, you know, I've been overworked this whole autumn season here. So far. So we'll see how that goes and if I can get better. But anyway, enough about us. On this week's show, We have Yakult Swallows International Advisor Tony Barnett as the guest. We're going to look at the first rounds of the CLCS and PLCS, discuss new managers, hit some notes and numbers, and if we have time, handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I was able to catch up with former Swallows pitcher Tony Barnett on Wednesday. We found a time when he could, you know, spend some quality minutes with us just talking about Yakult and the back-to-back pennants in the Central League. And, you know, he's an international advisor for the team, and we've had him on earlier this season, I think in the offseason, just before, maybe in the preseason. I can't remember. I didn't look up the numbers. I apologize for that. But he's always available when we need him. And, you know, we appreciate it. We had Aaron Guile on a couple weeks ago. And like I said before, the contributions of the foreign legion in Swallows land, that's all the foreign players this year, really, really had a big role in getting that team to back-to-back pennants in the Central League. And so these are two guys who are, I don't know how close they are to the players they bring in, but they certainly were pivotal in helping to bring over some guys who are quality players and who have been producing and contributing heavily to the Yakult Swallows and their marches. And who knows how much farther they're going to go. I'm thinking they're going to be just as good next year, if not better. But anyway, I was able to sit down on Wednesday and talk with Tony. So here's a little bit of our chat. Joining us this week is Tony Barnett, an international advisor with the Yakult Swallows, the two-time reigning Central League reigning champion. Congratulations on another organizational win.
Thanks, John. Happy to be here, man. Yeah, what a great time to be a part of Yakult, huh?
Yeah, people think, and I think I fell in that boat, in that it's either the expectation that you came on the show, and in fact, and told us before the season or right at the beginning of the season that the expectation doesn't change just because you won a championship. It's a new year. And I didn't take it as a blah, 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 blah kind of situation. I certainly understand when you go out there and you're competing, you want to win. But I saw a lot of emotion at the end of the clincher, and it kind of shocked me. I thought, well, these guys were there last year. They've been here before. This is not anything, you know, life changing. But it was, or it seemed to be. How did you see it?
You know, obviously, you gotta imagine that no two championships are the same. You know, no two seasons are alike. The personnel within a clubhouse, as similar as it could get, is never the same. You know, everybody's different, and each year comes with its own challenges. For Yakult to go through the COVID season and persevere through all of that and pull out a championship was fantastic. And for them to do that again this year amidst some things that happened on, you know, they had some, they had another bout with COVID at one point, and throughout the season, things happen, injuries and sicknesses and stuff like that. But those are some pretty big and significant years were some very big and significant pandemic hurdles for them to pull it out back to back. It's impressive. I'm really happy for those guys. I think Takatsu covered it in the speech with the fans, where, you know, he mentioned that winning a championship is hard and winning a second one is even harder. And he's not incorrect. It's not just a cliche in sports. It's just a fact. But, you know, again, congratulations to those guys, you know, that whole staff, everybody that's in that clubhouse on a day-to-day basis, showing up every morning and getting to the clubhouse and doing what's necessary for that organization to run on all cylinders at all times, and to have the marathon of the season kind of come to an end and be on top heading into the playoffs. It's special. And like you said, there's emotion, and of course, because no two seasons are alike, and I'm sure within that clubhouse there were some battles that went on physically, mentally, and emotionally that a lot of guys probably overcome, which happens a lot during a baseball season. And you know, for them to be just at the top at the end of it all is, it's great. And of course, now that that's over, you know, the next step comes into play, and you know, enjoy the night, enjoy the day. You know, your champions, now get busy and get ready to take it to the climax series.
Sure, sure. Now, if I may, I'd like to stop you. I think no matter how small the contribution that an organization wins the championship, and I think you're part of it, so stop saying they. Obviously, you weren't in the clubhouse and you weren't on the field and you weren't making those kinds of decisions, but I think you're part of it, so...
Well, thank you. I mean, it is nice to be a part of the organization. It's a happy feeling. You know, Aaron and I are very proud of what we do, and you know, as we learn and grow in our new professions along with them, we do what we can to help them, you know, identify talent for the next wave. But I mean, all the praise goes to the guys that are on the field.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
In between the lines every night, you know, those guys, I think we got production from just about every single foreign guy that touched the field this year, whether small or great. You know, they produce in a certain, you know, way. Sure. And I think they've held themselves to an on field and off the field standard, which is in line with Yuckholt's ideals and organizational values. And you know, Aaron and I, you know, from this side of the ocean, we're just really proud to be a part of the organization, and we're really proud of those guys.
Okay. All right. So from what you saw, I know you watched a lot of film this season, and you saw your team going up against the other Central League teams, but what's your assessment of the Central League as a whole? Not to say that you guys dominated the whole season, because it was a challenge, but you're able to go back to back.
You know, I got to be honest with you, John. You know, the more and more that we get into, I mean, I can't speak for Aaron, but the more and more I get into my job over here, I really have not focused on the entire Central League as a whole as I have in years past. My focus really has been on what the Swallows are currently doing.
Sure.
You know, right. And, you know, and then with the travel and just being able to open up our job as far as travel goes with getting out and seeing more baseball, you know, my focus has been a lot more there. So I really can't speak to the entirety of the Central League outside of the fact that I just can't be more pleased that the Swallows are still just taking it to guys.
Yeah.
You know, especially the Kyojin across there, you know, it's always pleasing to watch. You know, it's always a pleasure when the good guys win, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can tell you that I know we have a few Giants fans who listen, but yeah, that is not our,
yeah, they
our,
know
our
it's all in good jest,
base.
You know, but I mean, it's a crosstown rivalry, and you know, that runs deep with me, so.
Sure. Okay. So if your focus is on the Swallows, then what have they been doing better than other teams?
I mean, obviously they've been doing a good job at scoring runs. I know their run differential isn't the best in the league, right? But they've been winning baseball games. I mean, guy, you've got Scott McGuff in the closer's role, who shut the ball. You know, he shut the door as much as you asked him to do. You know, there's like one or two hiccups there throughout the season, but so be it. You know, end up with 38 saves. The starting pitching, they've held the line. They, you know, you ask for starting pitchers to go out and give a team a chance to win every single night. Whether or not that pitching staff ends up having phenomenal stats or not, it doesn't matter. What matters is, on a nightly basis, did they give a team a chance to win?
Well, be careful now. And Jim doesn't like that phrase, they win games. He berated me earlier this season.
Don't twist my words. But they, as a starting pitcher, if you go out and pitch in a game and you leave the game in a manner where your team is in a position to strike or win the game, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh,
as a starting pitcher, you just set the tone. That's where I'm getting at.
No, wins and losses. Yeah, I'm not talking about your comment about starting pitchers per se. You opened your response by saying winning games was how the Swallows have been doing it. And Jim and I had this discussion earlier this year. I said, look, you know how you win games? You win games. You know, you make the plays that you're supposed to make or that are makeable. You get hits in timely fashions. You get walks. You steal bases. You do whatever it takes to win games. I'm not talking about the starting pitching because I know that.
Okay, gotcha. I hear what you're saying there. And you're right. You know, a lot of times, especially when, you know, guys like Jim, I can hear the conversation before it's even, you know, before I even got into it, you know, between you guys. I'm excited to listen to it. But it's. I get where he comes from, but there is an element of luck in this sport. There is an element of making your own luck. And on a night-to-night basis, did you make more plays than the other team? And when it comes down to the playoffs, what do they always talk about? Who made more plays and who made the least amount of mistakes? And or something along the lines of who capitalized on the most mistakes?
Correct.
And, you know, counted up over the marathon of 143-game season, Swallows obviously did that more than the other guys that they faced. I don't have the head-to-head win-loss records right in front of me. I know they struggled with Chunichi
for a
time.
No, the whole season.
Which is an anomaly, right? I mean, it's kind of a weird outlier because Chunichi was at the bottom of the Central League, correct?
That's correct.
Right. So, I mean, that's one of those things where any given night, any given team can win. You know, because they're all approached out there, and I know it doesn't quantify that way usually, but the fact of the matter is the best team has struggled against, so to speak, the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
So there's an element to that. There's a human element to those two matching up, whether that's the Swallows playing down to their competition or the Chunichi Dragons putting on their A game for the Swallows. There's things like that that go into account on a human side of it that can't be quantified.
Sure.
So... you know, you talk about that, and it just boils down to our original comment. Who stayed mentally locked in every single night for the most nights to win the ballgame, to make the least amount of mistakes, or to capitalize on the mistakes when they presented themselves?
Sure.
You know, wins are all about capitalizing on opportunities when they're given, and at the end of 143 games, the team with the best record did that better than most of the other teams.
Right. Now, you getting back to the pitching, I was amazed because the rotation, I guess, was strong all season, despite missing Okugawa, who was the ace last year and was a big postseason contributor and who has zero W's this year. And to what do you attribute this year's pitching success?
You guys chuckled at me, what was it, two spring trainings ago when I brought up Masanori Ishikawa?
I always chuckle when you bring him up.
You know,
that's me. Not you guys, it was me.
Listen, and
guilty,
you know,
I'm not
superstitious, but I might be a little stitious, you know. But, you know, there's a guy, I will always, as an athlete, I will always return to the human element of the game. In everything that I do, I try to return myself to the human element of baseball and remember that these are human beings throwing these pitches. These are human beings swinging these bats.
Right.
Masanori Ishikawa is a leader. In every sense of the word, he has led by example. He's led in his actions. He's led by the words that he speaks within the clubhouse. And when you have a pillar in a pitching staff such as Masanori Ishikawa, someone to look to that has been through... man, what is this, 23 years or something?
I will look it up, yeah.
I mean, for the love of the game, he is a Yakult Swallow by every, you know, it's when you have a guy like that to keep control, and I don't even know how the dynamic works in the clubhouse, but I remember how it was when I was there, and even then, 7-8 years ago now, he was already the leader and the vocal leader and the guy that guys look to. Yeah. And so I can only imagine that that has increased over time. So I will go to that, saying that that is probably one of the larger reasons in my mind of why a pitching staff stays together in the midst of losing, so to speak, one of the top performers from this season's past. And you know, when you have something like that, you can contain the confidence within the staff where guys are going out saying, yeah, I'm the guy. That's not just a personal confidence. That's a team confidence. And that's a confidence that's gained by working with guys that believe in you as well.
Gotcha.
And if you have a guy like Masanori Ishikawa running the ship, more likely than not, that group is going to be well stuck together and on the same page.
All right. Well, playoff pitching is different, but what's different for guys on the mound when the playoffs start?
I mean, hell, the idea is to not give up any runs. By all means necessary, right?
Right.
Every run is, I'm not going to say life or death, but the magnification of every single run is larger than it was a week ago when the regular season was still going on. You know, obviously, if you're in a tight playoff race, that you could argue with me there. But fact of the matter is, on the playoffs, every run is magnified, and every run costs a little bit more money than it did in the regular season. So focus is up. Guys understand that every game is so important, because in the first series, you have three games to prove it. You got to win two of them. In the next series, if you're the second or third seed going up there, then you've got six games to prove it, and they're already up one. So, I mean, as an athlete, you've got to make sure that you roll into the ballpark every single day and you're just locked in, ready to go. You go home at night, you get your rest, you eat your dinner, you get your sleep, you do that, and you get to the ballpark and make sure you're locked in, ready to win. And if not, you look at yourself in the mirror and say, did I do everything I could to win this baseball game,
right,
or to win this series? And if you say yes, which most of us probably wouldn't, even if we did, you know, we can poke holes and find things that we need to improve on, but that's what professionals do. But if you can say, I did everything I could, I prepared well and I played hard and they just beat us tonight, then, you know, you tip your cap to them and you try again next year. But as a pitcher going into the playoffs, it's just more of a focus and more of a trust. Make sure that you continue to trust in yourself and trust in your teammates, because it's easy to press.
Okay.
And when you have when you have leaders who have been there,
mm-hmm,
and guys who have been there consistently, they know how to keep that momentum and they know how to keep that attitude moving forward, you know, of not pressing and just making sure guys understand that this is serious, but be yourself. Don't change. Trust your stuff.
Gotcha. Now, so many questions, so little time, but I'll make this the last one. We always talk about...
Yeah, I won't get so long-winded.
No, it's no problem. We often talk about batters trying to do too much, but what does it look like when a pitcher comes out and tries to do too much?
Well, I mean, you'll see it. You guys know it the second you see it. You know, he's either overthrowing, a guy who has control is all of a sudden, you know, nibbling a little bit, or you can even see it in... his stuff flattening out in the zone, or his mannerisms are off. When guys start pressing, they start to aim the ball. And if you're aiming the ball, then it means you're not trusting, you know, the muscle memory and the things that you've prepared for physically to do. And that usually ends poorly for pitchers. So the idea is to be out there and not change who you are and not change what has made you successful up until that point. And don't let the magnitude of the moment sink in. Understand it, but don't let it rule your moment, because you're there for a reason. You're there for, because you know how to do the job. You've already proven it. Now just do it again. And just know that guy across the street, but, you know, out in the batter's box is trying to do the same thing to you. And you got to know that he's pressing too, probably a little bit, you know, so... You know, you're not alone. Understanding that and just realizing that it's a normal feeling to be nervous or, you know, amped up or psyched up, however you want to transfer that anxious energy. But, you know, just as professionals, we love it. Love being in that moment. And, you know, win or lose, you just give the other guy your best and see how it comes out. So you just don't want to see young guys pressing and trying to do too hard. And that's the importance of having veteran guys like Ishikawa around to kind of notice it if it is happening and to try to calm the waters before anything happens on the field.
All right. We always appreciate talking to you. Thank you very much for your time, and we'll talk again.
Hey, John. Appreciate being here, man. Tell hi to Jim for me.
All righty. All right. So there's so much there that I'd love to discuss, but we just don't have time. But I think Tony and we could have talked all night. I had prepared, a few more questions and really wanted to ask him, but We certainly had hit the time limit and on both ends. He had things to do, and I know that we can't go that far into the show, but what stood out to you after you heard the chat?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I think right off the bat was a really good one because, you know, it's a great question. And I don't think about it that much, but really important. You know, when you ask, you know, how, why, or, you know, this championship seemed really big when it might to others, you know, not seem like a big deal, or maybe it shouldn't be that big a deal or whatever. But I thought his answer was absolutely perfect, which is, of course, everyone is different. Every season is a different challenge. And I think that's so true because we lose sight of that, you know, in the same way that, you know, we look at players and their skills.
Mm-hmm.
And their sort of their performance norms, their statistical performance norms. And we see them more, you know, we notice that they change. This kind of random variation and intentional variation is something we're used to, but we still see them as being, I guess, objects sort of, you know, they're baseball players, and we often don't look at them, think of them all the time as being human beings.
Right.
And you know, it's so easy to overlook because every player is a moving part. And not only that, is every player a moving part on the team. Even if they're all the same, their lives are all in motion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their families are in motion. Their kids are getting older. Their parents are getting older. Their relationships are always changing. Their health is always fluctuating. They're always trying new things and ditching old things and trying things that work really well and things that don't work very well. So, and then on top of that, there's, you know, team challenges and group challenges. And so I thought what he said was really poignant, to be honest.
Mm.
You know, for that reason. So I thought that was worth repeating. Of course, the other one, I laughed at the same time Tony did. And you know what I'm talking about, because I, you know, it's like I could hear, I heard that one coming a mile away, and I was just starting to cackle when he said, "Wow, I can't wait to hear what Jim says." Well, I'll keep it pretty short. And it's not that I disagree with you. It's that I try to be, and I fail as badly as most people in trying to be precise. But there's always, you know, it's often the things I jump on are sort of the easy explanations or the common explanations. You know, and the easy explanations have a role because people understand them. We were having that discussion today at the office. You know, should I say Minnetaka Murakami hit one home run in his first major league season? That's fine with me because I, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Japan is a major league. It's not MLB, but it is a major league, and I'm fine with that. But most readers would say, well, when did he play in the U.S.?
That's, you know, what I would say.
Yeah, well, that's what you would say because, you know, you're enculturated to that. I mean, it's that's fine.
Oh, but I think we had this conversation about 3-4 sure. years ago. I just said it was branding. You can't take someone else's brand, and that, well, Major League is the brand of the.
Yeah, well, they sort of stole it, and they'd like to say that, but MLB is not the major leagues, and they say that too. Because there's so many major leagues that weren't MLB. And that's just the way, you know, that's by their own definition. So anyway, so let's, you know, going beyond that, but I'd say, you know, so if we say he hit one home run in five games, that's when he hit 18, but 17 of those home runs were in the minors. If we say he hit one, everybody will understand because they'll misinterpret it the right way. What I'm trying to say is that sometimes you just have to go with the flow and say what people are used to hearing so that they'll understand you, even if it's inaccurate and imprecise. And so
You got to speak either dumb it down for them or you speak a different language so that people understand.
Well, yeah, I understand that. And so there's a couple of things, and I'll go back on it. You know, it's essential, you know, it's essential to concentrate. I also love, you know, and this these two things intertwine, what he said about Masanori Ishikawa, even though when he says Masanori Ishikawa, it kind of grates a little bit, but he's right on, you know, 3 years ago when people were still calling him the ace pitcher, I would go, yeah, well, kind of that's the problem because I'd be looking at his pitching. But right about that time, right after that interview, I was talking to Ryota Igarashi in his last year with the Swallows. Mm-hmm. And we were talking outside the Jingu clubhouse, and here comes Ishikawa out of the weight room talking to a former player and his family, and they're talking, they're chatting, and you just see he was dripping with sweat coming from the weight room, and he's just completely buff. He's just a little guy, but he's built like a gymnast. Mm-hmm. And you just see he puts so much effort into it. And then the last couple of years I've watched him pitch and I realized what an artist he is. And so from that respect, I really like that. But I think, yeah, when he said that, I said, yeah, absolutely. I laughed at the time, but I'm not laughing anymore. And the reason I'm going to bring these two things together is because you two were talking about the importance of doing the little things to succeed. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think it's essential to, for teams to concentrate consistently and to do the little things to succeed, because not doing that allows, you know, talent to underperform.
Correct.
If you don't do it, it can become a clown, you know, a good team can become a clown show really easily. And in that mm-hmm. respect, leadership is a huge help there. And so that's what I was thinking about Ishikawa. And, you know, making your own luck. And I think making your own luck is a valuable thing too. It means, you know, you're proactive. You're not waiting until the last minute to prepare. You're confident and on top of things. Leadership, again, helps this by, you know, establishing norms. And you win by doing winning things. And I'll say yes. But I would also add, you win, you know, when you say, the team that does the little things better than the others wins, I have to say, yeah, if everything else is equal, that's true.
Sure. Yeah. That'll get you.
But of course, teams don't start out equal. They have different amount of talent they all have different amount of talent and of course the luck, as I said last time, is largely things, not necessarily random. Although sometimes, you know, we see games where the team who plays better doesn't win the ball bounces the wrong way or something. And there is luck, but there's also things you can't control. You can't control if, you know, your opponents are having meltdown, you know, having a meltdown that week, and you get to flatten them. So there's lots of things that go on, but that's all I would want to say. It's just trying to be precise and not pick on people.
Right. And yeah, we had conversations before. We talked about, doing the little things, and you're right. And that's the whole point. You know, the teams are even. We saw the Central League. Remember the first question I asked them, you know, about the whole Central League. And he said, well, he wasn't able to concentrate on the Central League. So I just shifted the question to concentrating on what the Yakult Swallows did. And yeah, you know, I had planned to ask him about Murakami and then we had that mix up about, he thought I was referring to winning, you know, pitchers or starting pitchers winning games, and we had to bring it back to no, I'm talking about winning games as a team and doing all the things that it takes to win a game, and that's how you end up winning the game. And he was definitely on with that. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've already had that conversation. And
sure.
I think we'll probably have it again. Because
I was going to say.
Yeah, it'll probably come up in the playoffs here. I thought that was the biggest thing that stood out to me. I would love to talk about everything in the chat, because I thought he had so many great points. But that Ishikawa situation, it just brought me back. Because remember when I played basketball, I would always tell my teammates, I would say, look, you don't have to be a scorer to be a winner. you know, you need to do the things that we need to have done. You need to play defense, first of all. You need to rebound. You need to try to get steals. You know, if we can get steals and get some easy baskets, that's going to help us. So you need to figure out how to do those things, but also at the same time, not let in easy baskets. So doing the little things, it becomes, as a collective, becomes a big thing, because if you're not doing those things, just like you said, if the games are close, then those things are going to be the things that make a difference in who wins and loses. And so I thought about Ishikawa, and I remembered there was a guy on our team, on my basketball team, and you know, I was older than he was by a number of years, but I always worked so much harder than he did. So I went up to him one day and I said, look, you know, you need to do these other things to get the respect of the rest of your team. You need to be working on your dribbling. You need to be working on your free throw shooting. You need to be working on this, that, and the other, so that they see you doing that, because that, you know, even though I'm the oldest one and I was the team leader and captain and all that other stuff, I was trying to get some of the other guys who were not up there in talent level to raise their level. And, you know, he was what he was. And the same thing is for Ishikawa. He is what he is. He's not going to win 10 games for the team every year. He's not going to be the, I was about to say the opening day starter, but he is every year, so I can't say that. But he's not the ace. Let's put it that way. He's not the true ace. But he works hard enough, apparently, and he is in a leadership role to a point where his teammates have so much respect for him that they don't mind that he's the opening day starter. They don't mind that they're comfortable with him going out there and pitching against other top or elite pitchers as in the ace slot during the rotation for however long he goes out there and does it from the start of the season. So all those things were important. And you know, we don't see, I think I told you about this before, the things we can't see are the practice and the preparation. We only see the performance and those three P's that go into the game, you know, the practice, the preparation, and the performance. And then we can only see the performance. And so we have to grade on that, because as observers, that's all we really have an opportunity to do. But when you know that a guy is putting in the practice and he doesn't have the results in the performance, then you know how random sometimes things can be. And so that's what I want to keep in mind coming out of this conversation, is that, you know, you are who you are. You can work really, really hard, or you can not work really hard. And your results are going to be your results, but the team is always going to respect the hard worker. And you can be a team captain even though you're not the most elite on the team. And that's how, essentially, I think the Swallows have gone through this season without the guy who was, you know, I talked about Okugawa not being there and not winning a game for them this season, and the whole team not missing a beat. And I just think that the leadership is just in place within the team and structure and DNA that it has, and within the leadership structure that it has. So that's what I take away from this conversation.
Yeah, I think there's lots to that. There's a lot to that story, and there's a lot to, you know, you could do a great, and I think if we had time, and one thing I used to like to do with my analytical guides to Japanese baseball was sort of like look at each team and sort of like say, what's an issue that's really interesting about this team? What did they do? Like the year, you know, the manager, you know, trying to figure, like take a manager who basically the media had decided was inscrutable and did things at random, and then sort of like, you know, sifting through what he did and look for patterns, because if you look hard enough, sometimes you'll see them.
Mm-hmm.
I love doing that. I rarely have the time to do it, but I love doing it. Like when Hideki Kuriyama, you know, went to short starters and a variety of different patterns. And it took me a little while to figure it out. But once I saw it, I go, oh yeah, I get it. I get it. And I love doing that and sort of like figuring out, you know, where are they, you know, what's the missing piece, or seeing if you can find it. Because every team is a puzzle. Every person is a puzzle, and every team is a bigger puzzle. So I love that stuff. And that's part of what keeps me going.
All right. All right. Well, let's make a seamless transition and go into the CLCS that was between the first stage here. It is between the Hanshin Tigers and the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars, and they split the first two games here. So Hanshin won 2-0 on Saturday behind ace Koyo Aoyagi. They closed out the game with Atsuki Yuasa, a young pitcher who gets the final four outs for his first career save. I was shocked, but I think the announcers were shocked. I think the Bay Stars were shocked. I think the people watching were shocked. I don't think anybody really saw this coming, and that's the beauty of the playoffs, with managers being able to go with the hot hand no matter who that is and no matter, you know, what the stakes are. And it was a close game. It's a 2-0 game. It only takes a walk and a home run in that little home run friendly stadium to turn things around. And they, you know, Yuasa did the job, and he was really confident afterward. And Hanshin took that, you know, as a third place team, took that first game and really put some pressure on the Bay Stars. What did you see in that first game?
Well, I saw what you saw, and I saw it was fun to watch because I had seen Yuasa pitch this season, and I'd been I won't say I'd been bowled away by him, but I had been, you know, I thought, okay, he's got some stuff going on. And then when I looked at my numbers, I went, whoa, he's got his fastball, you know, registered in my database as one of the best, you know, as one of the best pitches in Japan. And I thought, wow. And then when I saw him pitch yesterday, I'm going, yeah, like that's the one. It's a 94, you know, 93, 94 mile an hour fastball, but it's got some real zip. It's got some real good spin on it. And batters have when he's throwing it well, batters have a hard time staying on it. So, and then of course he got the big final out of that very dangerous eighth inning when
pitch out of the jam, right?
Yeah, I think it was a 3-2 pitch to Shugo Maki, and he missed it. He missed that fork ball, but Maki chased it about a foot out of the zone. So all's well that ends well.
Right, right. Yeah, I was surprised at that. I mean, you know, it just goes to show you that these runs are hard to come by in the playoffs. And Aoyagi had a single with one out in the fifth inning to start this rally. And you know, just one of those innings. Shota Imanaga for the Bay Stars just had one of those innings where he couldn't get that last out and got himself into trouble. And that was basically the game. Gave up two runs in that inning. And Koji Chikamoto was among the league leaders in hits this year, and they just couldn't get him out this game, and it just cost him. So it just shows you really can't take runs for granted. You can't assume that you're going to score any. Obviously the Bay Stars could not generate any offense, and their top guys, Keita Sano, Shugo Maki, they came up late with men on base and couldn't keep the rally going, and that kind of thing happens. It's a pressure situation, and they didn't get the hits in this particular game, and so the Bay Stars didn't score. But I took away from this game that the Hanshin Tigers came in with a mentality that they're going to make the plays on defense, and they made a number of I wouldn't say great defensive plays, but good defensive plays to go along with just making the routine plays as well, because that had seemed to be a problem for them as well.
Well, it is particularly a problem, as I said. I really should count it. I should go back and I should go through all my games and which I actually could, come to think of it. I could go through all my games and find out how many more errors they have at Koshien. And I'm going to guess that they have a ton more at Koshien, because it just seems like that's where the balls fly around for no particular reason.
All right. So then in game two today on Sunday, the Bay Stars came back and tossed a shutout of their own. And I tell you, Shinichi Onuki, I mean, I had talked about him earlier this season. I thought he was going to get game two before the series started, and he did, and he was just fantastic. I was surprised when they took him out. I believe it was in the seventh inning that he came out of this game, and I just assumed that he was going to pitch a complete game, and they got a runner on third. I think they were looking for a strikeout situation, and I thought, okay, well, here comes Edwin Escobar. They're going to try to get him to face a left-handed batter and just strike him out, and they didn't. And boy, was I surprised to see Hiromu Ise come into this game. But he has been a guy, a right-handed pitcher for manager Daisuke Miura, who's been like that kind of cluster bomb that was in those games, in those video games in the 80s and 90s. And he would just bring him in whenever he just needed to blow everything up and keep guys from scoring. And that's what he did. He got a pop-up from Koji Chikamoto on one pitch, and then he escapes the jam with a flyout, and then he works a 1-2-3 eighth inning. And I at that point, I sent a message to Michael Westbay, and I said, you know, I know Yasuaki Yamasaki is the closer, but I just really like the way Ise's throwing. They've had some time off. They might as well just let him pitch the ninth. But I think they were thinking about game three as well, you know, if they get there, and that they would love to see Ise back out there for game three. So they gave him the ninth inning off, so to speak. But what was your takeaway from this game? I mean, they only got the one run, and I thought they sent the not so fleet of foot Neftali Soto from second base on a single when they did score their run, the lone run of the game in the fifth inning. And he got thrown out at the plate, and I thought it was just the silliest thing because they had no outs. I know they had the bottom of the order coming up, but they had no outs. And so I didn't think it was the smartest thing. And then I wondered if Neftali ran through a stop sign or not, but on one of the replays and one of the angles, you could see the third base coach waving him around. So it wasn't his fault. Anyway, what was your takeaway from game two?
Yeah, a couple of things. I was listening to the Hero interview a little bit, and which is good because we get that. If the Tigers had won, we wouldn't have gotten a Hero interview. We'd have gotten Yano talking instead. So we got that, and Onuki said it was the first time he'd ever struck out 10 batters in a game, which I thought was interesting. I remember Yasuhiro Ogawa's no-hitter in Yokohama was the first time he became the first pitcher to ever throw a no-hitter who had never struck out 10 batters in a game before.
Right.
And struck out 10. That was his career high. So that sort of reminded me of that. But he was, he was really good. I mean, he was just the Tigers. He faced the minimum, I think, through the first three or four innings because Koji Chikumoto got thrown out by a mile when Masayuki Kuwahara fumbled the single in center field. Tried to go for a second. He was thrown out by about 5 feet. He like did that little tango around second base, like, oh no, you can't touch me. You can't touch me. You know, he was playing tag. They were playing tag essentially. And so there was that. The Bay Stars pitching was just outstanding today. And yesterday, in game one, the Tigers were able to put their bat on the ball. Well, I should say, Takuma Nakano, who had four hits
and had
three, those guys, yeah, they just couldn't keep those guys off the bases, and they were kind of lucky they only allowed two runs. But you know, this series so far is a microcosm of the Bay Stars and Tigers seasons, because you know, the team that did all the scoring and run preventing is scored twice as many runs, but the series is tied. So, oh well, you know, we'll see what happens on Monday. It'll be fun. And it'll be fun because I'm looking forward to see, I say that and then I forget what his name is. Hiroto Saiki. Saiki. It's a hard name for me to say, but he's only 23 years old, but he's already been, his arm's been through the ringer. He had Tommy John surgery 2 years ago. He really hasn't pitched much. But he has pitched well this year. So he's one of those guys I've just really enjoyed watching him come back. So it'll be him and Haruhiro Hamaguchi. So we'll get who gets the alliteration award for today.
Yeah, certainly Hamaguchi's name is hard to say. Let's move along to the Pacific League. And the Lions were I guess, no match, I guess you could say, for the Hawks. The Hawks were playing at home. The Lions had struggled at, I'm sorry, this the Lions had struggled on the road this season, which I made a point of mentioning early on when I noticed it. And yeah, okay, they got Yuki Yanagita. We could say that, right yeah. off the bat.
I mean, yeah, they got geated. Yep.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes you mess with the geeta, you get gotten.
Hashtag high heat.
But
good.
Yeah, he had a strong September. I say that he didn't really have that strong a September. He just had a number of notable home runs in September and a number of big hits, but he wasn't that strong. And they also got Kodai Senga. And Senga is normally really – he's normally good when he's healthy enough to be on the mound, but he just can't get through a full season being on the mound, and they really have to handle him with kid gloves. But he was good on Saturday. And Yanagita, like we were talking about, he had a three-run homer off Seibu ace Kona Takahashi in a four-run third inning, and that was basically about it, and it was about run prevention after that. And we saw some uncharacteristic poor defense from the Hawks, and that led to the Lions' first runs, but I think the Hawks kind of settled in. And the Hawks have this interesting mix of players who don't really have that much playoff experience with a mixture of grizzled veterans who have a lot of playoff experience. So it's really weird. There's a gap of guys who had just came up. You know, obviously the Hawks didn't make the playoffs last year. They won these two games. And, you know, we got word at the end of the game, the announcer said now that the Hawks have won 18 consecutive postseason games. And so a lot of these guys like Mimori, some of their pitchers who don't have a lot of playoff experience because they weren't on those playoff teams in the past.
Masaki Mimori and Tatsuro Yanagimachi is a inexperienced and
in the playoffs. They have experience. Yeah. These guys have been on the team. Well, yeah. They've been around. They just haven't been asked to do much in the playoffs. And so, they pretty much weren't
playing last time the Hawks were in the postseason.
Right. And then you got guys like Taisei Makihara and then Graciel and Alfredo Despaigne and, you know, Akira Nakamura. You've got so many guys who have a lot of playoff experience. So it's just this weird mix of players who some have a lot, some have zero. And so, but they made it work in this particular game. And Senga pitches, he goes eight innings, allows four hits, strikes out 11, but he walked four and he only gave up two runs. And like I said, two earned runs, I think one of them was unearned. So he worked out of a jam in the eighth inning, in which I thought they were going to go and get him. But then I remembered about how these young, not young, but again, inexperienced relievers they have, like Koya Fuji and Keisuke Izumi. Mm-hmm. And those guys, remember, they left last weekend's game in tears, both of them, each one, one after the other. So I don't know that they wanted to go to those guys in the eighth inning. And they said, Senga, you just take care of this. We'll get it to Levon Morinello in the ninth. And so that's the way that went. But what was your takeaway from this game?
Oh, well, that was, it was straight on. I absolutely agree with you. It was all about Yuki Nagita doing his thing. I mean, it wasn't one of his weird home runs, but it wasn't one of those ones where it would like, damn, I can't believe I hit that one, but I've done it so many times before. So yep. It was like, oh, got onto that one a little bit, but oh, it's still going out. Good.
No, it was, he got these. So,
He mishit it a bit, but it was a fat pitch that he mishit. It went out, landed in the home run terrace, which is good enough for government work. And the Hawks just kind of, they built on it from there. And it was they had a lot of help. Masaki Mimori had a scored a run and drove in a run, and Yukio Shuto drove in a run and scored a run. So there was production all up and down the lineup. And Tomoya Mori hit a home run for the Lions to keep it from being less of a one-sided game.
Yeah, yeah. So 5-3 the final in that one, and then today 8-2 the final. The Hawks sweep, and Yanagita again. He hits a grand slam, and this one's on his birthday. And you know, there's one thing I know about the outs. They're not. You don't find the outs where that pitch was, which was middle. It was low, but it, again, I always say it's the muscle memory is a lot easier to fire up on those pitches middle, and Yanagita put a charge in that. And so after that, it was, you know, that was fairly early on. So after that, it was just a matter of, it was the third inning. So it was a matter of now Higashihama avoiding trouble and just being aggressive and getting into the dugout. And he went through five innings. And you know, held the Lions to a minimum one run, I guess, as minimum as you can go. And then, they just got out of there. I thought Takuya Akai had a couple RBIs and a couple hits, and they just went through and, took care of business, and they're moving on to go and play the back-to-back champion Buffaloes, and I just find this upcoming series fascinating. But what did you take away from today's game with the?
Well, actually, I thought that I want to talk about the Yanagita home run because that's kind of two things. I thought I watched after the home run. I kind of switched and watched the Bay Stars game mostly.
I think so did everyone. Yeah. Since they start these games, at the same time.
I saw Higashihama just looking completely in control at the start of this game. It was like they're going, he had an umpire who's giving him a friendly zone, and he's going like, it's hard to believe, you know, when I looked at the end, oh, he struck out three batters in five innings. I saw them all. So it looked like he was, you know, he was going to be, I was expecting he was going to strike out six or seven, but he was cruising. But that's the thing with him. If his location is usually really good, and it was very good today, but sometimes his pitches aren't all that great.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, those things tend to catch up with him. They did. He gave up four hits, but three of them were extra base hits, but they were all juggled all at the bottom of the order. So those are the two things. And the other thing I would take away from it was, or I guess that was it, is that Higashihama looked really good and Yanagita's home run. And the other thing that was interesting to me is when those games started, it was like, you want to say who knew, because somebody knew, because the announced starters for the Bay Stars and Tigers were listed at game time. Oh, you know why? I think that the reason for that actually was the Hawks game was going to be a night game tomorrow.
Mm.
So that's why they weren't listed at 2 p.m. So, gotcha. But it was almost like they knew somebody knew what was going to happen, because there were no announced starters for the Hawks Lions game three at the start of when game two began.
All right. Conspiracy theories, I love it.
I'm not going there, but yeah.
Well, keeping in that theme, so the Hawks must—they're just going to go and beat the Buffaloes in this series, then, is what you're saying?
I have no. Well, actually, that would be—that's my prediction.
You know, it's going to be interesting. I think it's a close call. The Buffaloes had the better of the records head to head during the regular season. Mm-hmm. They won 15, they lost 10. I don't think they have this complex about playing against the Hawks now. I like what Satoshi Nakajima, the manager, has done in terms of just settling this team into an understanding of, look, just make the plays you can make, and let's not throw the ball around, and let's not take all these extra chances defensively. Let's just, you know, settle down out there and make things simple. Catch it first, then throw it. And they just really have not beaten themselves. So I think the Hawks are going to have to beat them. I think the Hawks have we know Tsuyoshi Wada is going to be out there, but I don't expect him to pitch deep into any games in particular.
No,
so he'll probably be effective for his five or six innings or five plus innings, whatever he throws. But then they're going to have to go to that bullpen. And actually, I think that's where the Oryx Buffaloes might have the advantage. If they keep these games close, if they're tied in the late innings before they get to the ninth inning and have a chance to score runs, I'm going to be interested in seeing if the Hawks can keep them off the board. But with all the games being in the same general vicinity, and maybe not down in Kyushu, but in the Osaka Kansai area, I don't think that's really a big advantage for the Buffaloes. And it's just really too close to call. But if you like experience and savviness, you go with the Hawks. I think if you like the young up-and-coming talent and the sort of new kid on the block who has bought a nice house and really has moved in and wants to invite their friends over for pool parties and stuff, I think you go with the Buffaloes. I would probably put my money down on the Hawks because I think they can win anywhere, and I think they're going to figure out a way to at least pitch early on in that series. And remember now, they've used their ace already, but their ace is going to come back pitching against somebody lower in the talent pool or the rotation for the Buffaloes as the series gets longer. So, you know, obviously winning that first game because you have the one win advantage. And so the Buffaloes do. So if the Hawks can win that first game and get even, I think that changes the tone and the tempo for what the Buffaloes are going to do for the rest of the series. So that should be fascinating. What about the Central League? We don't know who the teams are going to be. It could be either one, obviously. I'm favoring the Bay Stars. I think I picked them when we talked about this last week just because I just figured they're not going to throw the game away. And they made a couple of nice plays. In fact, Toshiro Miyazaki made a nice play in the ninth inning on the first out of tonight's game to get to this final game. So what's your assessment of that game three, and then looking ahead to what the Swallows have to face?
Well, I'm going to pick the Tigers. I just think they're the better of the two teams, and that's the only there's not a lot of evidence based on that other than, you know, what they did during the season, and leads me to believe they're better, the two teams. I mean, the Tigers had deficiencies. I don't think they're particularly bad. You know, of course, the defense was a deficiency. It was a little, they were played, I don't know if anybody remembers a game, Time Bomb.
I do not.
No, you wouldn't remember that anyway. It was a game in which there was a bomb or something, and you it was a party game. You like push the button and it would go around and click, and you had to hand it from player to player, and whoever had it in their hands when the flag popped out and said bang, you know, you were the loser. And that's the Tigers defense is a little bit like that. It's it's okay until it isn't. So if they have one of those days, then no. But the Tigers are that kind of team. You know, they've got that time bomb going, and then they've got the other time bomb like today when nothing they do on offense works, and they got shut out 24 times this year. So those two things make them a little bit of a wild card. But I'm going to say, you know, those the Bay Stars also had their issues, and I think I would make the Tigers a slight favorite. If it's tied after eight, then no chance for Hanshin. They're done and dusted.
Really? All right.
Yeah. So that's the thing, especially because the Bay Stars only need to tie to win to advance. Because if the series ends in a tie, one win, one loss, one tie, the higher seeded team advances.
Right. Right. So I'm going to go with the Bay Stars, and then against the Swallows, I should say why. I'm going to go with the Bay Stars is that I think they've been held down with the offense. I think they're going to score more runs on Monday night, and I don't know that they're going to be able to prevent as well as they have. Hamaguchi has been pitching well recently. I like the matchup against him against the Tigers, but you know, I'm just going off of previous starts, and he looked good the last time. I just remember him winning a big game against them in September, so that's my lasting memory. But I think the offense is going to come alive, hopefully, for the Bay Stars fans. So, and then against the Swallows, I just don't think either of these teams really has what it takes to get past the Swallows, but if there was going to be an upset, I would think that the Bay Stars could pull it off because of their pitching. It's because of what I said during the season, which was that there's not much follow-up. They don't really have an elite pitcher, but there's certainly, and I say that, you know, Imanaga was really good the other night. I mean, he just had one bad inning, or the other day or Saturday, but I don't think there's that much fall-off between him and the guy who would pitch game five in the series. So, whereas I think there's more of a fall off for the Swallows of, and again, when that game five comes along, the, you know, it's going to be Imanaga coming along. It's going to game six. It's going to be Oniki coming back, and he's going to be facing, in theory, as far as we know, maybe someone who's not the frontline starter for the Swallows, because their rotation would have been flipped. And if that's the case, I would favor the Bay Stars. So, but I don't really see them having a chance to get by. I think the Swallows are going to go back, and we are likely to see a rematch of last year's matchup, which should be fun. And I probably go with the Buffaloes on that one.
I agree with you. I think the Swallows are the best, probably. Swallows are probably the best team in Japan this year. And although their pitching right now is not as good as it was, I mean, in the first half of the season, the starting pitching was better than average. It was, mm-hmm. It was like it picked up where it left off last year. And then the second half of the season, I'm going, what are these guys? They got COVID and they forgot how to pitch. And although that's not the thing, they knew what they were doing. I mean, they were doing things the way they had, but they weren't doing it as well. And of course, Hiratoshi Takanashi, who was very good at the end of last season and very good at the start of this season, just, you know, they said, wow, you're so bad, son. Let's try in middle relief. And he's going like, oh yeah, well, take me out of the starting rotation, 'cause I'm walking five guys in five innings. I'll walk five guys in three innings as a reliever. You know, I'll show you. So we've seen that. Of course, they don't really need to throw guys into middle relief. The bullpen is really stacked, and that's, you know, that's sort of the Swallows game. I mean, you know, last year you sort of, you know, you threw down the gauntlet and said, let's see what Yakult can do when their starters don't, you know, in 2022, and their starters don't go six innings, and they're like going, oh yeah, we'll show you. Yeah. They were better. So, you know, and Kazuto Taguchi came out with the best, you know, the best fast, you know, he's like 33 years old and he comes out with the best fastball he's ever had in his life. And being like this gutsy middle reliever coming in, you know, like, just save me until there's no outs and the bases load and I'm ready kind of guy.
Right.
So I the thing the Swallows have when they get there is really, really tons of confidence. I mean, they kind of sleepwalked through a lot of the second half of the season. I don't mean that in a like they were careless or anything, but things just, everything kind of that could go wrong with that team did go wrong. And they, for the postseason, they are getting Keiji Takahashi back, and I don't think he's pitched in a month and a half because of COVID. In fact, I don't think he's pitched since July or August. I don't think he's pitched. So it's going to be interesting. But as Tony said, you know, Scott McGuff has been as good. I think he's been as good as any closer in Japan this year.
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, he's right up there with Raidel Martinez and Yuki Matsui, who are probably, those three were the best this year in my opinion.
And Taisei Ota, yeah.
And Taisei Ota, sure. So it's going to be fun. I think, you know, the Tigers are, I think, a very good team. And if they can put things together, and they certainly can put the bat on the ball, especially if the Swallows pitchers are doing what they did much of the second half, which is just pounding strikes with straight pitches. And you know, I can see tons of hits, and base stars are the same. You throw them stuff in the strike zone that's flat and lifeless, they're gonna put some life into it. So it's going to be competitive for that reason. On the other hand, the Swallows offense is also really, really deep and easily better than either of those other teams' offenses. So it's going to be fun. I think the Swallows are going to win largely because I think they're a better planned team than either of those two. They're better balanced, and well, except for the starting pitching, they're better balanced. But it'll be fun, and it might not be, but I'm expecting to see the Swallows and the Hawks replay their 2015 Japan Series clash. But I won't get into where it goes past that.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk about that next week. Mm-hmm. All right. Making a four-seam transition, there were some managerial moves. We did discuss Tadahito Iguchi leaving the Lotte Marines mm-hmm. last week, and Shinji Sasaoka stepping down from the Hiroshima Carp. And already the Marines have named, and I mentioned it on the show last week, that Masato Yoshii would probably be a good choice, and he was announced as the choice this week. This past week, after guys like Yusuke Torigoe, the farm team manager, left the organization, and with a number of other coaches. And it made me think of something that my wife does not like, Tomoya Satozaki. He's one of the Pro Yaku News commentators, and I forgot which day of the week he comes on, but my wife tries to really get out of the room on those particular days because she doesn't like the way he talks. And I thought, well, maybe he would go back to the Marines as a coach. So you have an opportunity there because there's some openings, I told her. And she's hoping that happens, but there were movements with among the coaches as well. So, but Yoshii's going to take over. So that's good news in my opinion for Roki Sasaki and the Marines.
Yeah, well, that was the open question last week, was what's going to happen, because Iguchi was part of the, you know, he was part of the program with Sasaki. Ostensibly, he was part of the program with Sasaki, you know, shepherding him, you know, we're not going to pitch him as long as he was making no push to pitch him when his recovery was not where it needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I understand, the person who really drove that was Masato Yoshii, who was their pitching coordinator, if mm-hmm. not just the Roki Sasaki coordinator.
Right.
And the thing with Yoshii is, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but he got his degree in coaching. I don't know if he got a degree, but he studied at the Tsukuba University Graduate School of Sports Science.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he completed his degree, but his mentor there was one of the Japan's baseball biomechanic pioneers when he was a manager of Tsukuba University's baseball team. And one of his players there was Roki Sasaki's high school coach.
Hmm.
And that's where that genesis of the coach taking all the players to have ultrasounds on their elbows and shoulders and,
right.
You know, their knees and things, and, you know, checking their bone density and other, you know, blood tests, looking for potential pitfalls, and identifying Sasaki as a guy who was very physically late developing. In terms of his bone density and his bone structure, that he was still growing at the age of 17 and 18, that he was his bones were getting longer. And so he wanted to be extra careful. And the Marines have said, yeah, we think that's the issue. So we're carefully monitoring him.
Gotcha.
So Yoshii's part of that, you know, he's in there. And so having him, it was, you know, in some ways, I think it was a no-brainer. I think the Marines said, look, who is the guy, on the one guy on this team who we can get fans to come in and see if we just say he's going to play? Okay, and let's take care of him. We may finish fifth, but we're going to take care of Roki Sasaki.
and finish fifth and take care of him, they did. All right, and so then we had the CARP, nothing officially announced, but last week when I mentioned that Sasaoka was stepping down, I thought the first name that came to mind to me was Takahiro Arai, former Tigers and CARP slugger and guy who has 2,000 hits, has a lot of respect, played for a long time, and he's such a nice guy. In fact, I thought he was too nice a guy. I was talking to somebody at the office, and I said, I don't know if he could tell somebody, you know, sit down, you're not playing, or come out of the game, you didn't do this the way I asked you, or these other things. But he, like I said, he is a 2,000 hit guy, and he is well-respected. He's really cerebral. I think he understands the game. He seemed to be one of the guys who played the game but understood all the things, the moving parts around it as well. Kind of like a LeBron James type who understood the league, the situations in games, the ownership. I mean, just understands everything. And he was a pivotal player in the mini strike that went on in, what was that, 2004, was it?
I don't know if he was a pivotal player. He was later the president of the Players Union about 6 years after that, but yeah.
Yeah, I just remember him speaking. I remember him speaking
and doing interviews. Oh, okay. And I was covering it, and I don't remember that. Okay.
No, I mean, I maybe I'm misremembering. I'm having a senior moment or something. But I just remember him talking about it. I remember other players as well, but there were other players who spoke, I remember. But anyway.
Yeah, no, I think he's the first word that came to mind when I wrote about him is big and affable. He was the guy who I was sitting with a friend eating my bento outside Tokyo Dome before the MLB Japan All-Star game one day, and he walked past me and I didn't see him and he said hi, you know. So he was always really friendly with reporters, except when he was with the Tigers, when I found that he was really uptight for most of until the very end of his time with the Tigers. Then he was like going, I'm glad I'm going to be out of here.
Yeah. That uptightness
permeating
in the Tigers land. Yeah.
Yeah. When I went to interview him, his first spring training with the Tigers, he's like, what are you asking me that for? You know, it was so out of character with him. You know, he pretty much snapped at me. And I thought, whoa, welcome to your new home. But he was, people around baseball consider him to be really smart. I don't know. But he was always friendly and open, and I thought his answers were well thought out. And so, yeah, I don't see any reason why he couldn't be a really good manager.
All right, so yeah, that good. So he's named on Friday, so good. And as far as the Giants go, the only news about them is
You're going to skip Tsuji. So after the Pacific League Climax Series first stage ended, the Lions
tonight,
announced, on Sunday, the Lions announced that Hatsuhiko Tsuji will be leaving, which we kind of knew because he's been saying for 2 years he wants out. And if you're with the Fighters and Lions, I guess it takes 2 years for them to listen to you.
The divorce takes a long time, man.
It does indeed. They get managers they can't get rid of. And then it's funny because they'll get something that like they cannot get rid of fast enough. And then they get guys who are really good and they want to leave and they go, no, 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 we're not going to let you. So he's leaving.
We had an announcement. We actually had an announcement last year, and it was one of the players we were talking to who said, oh, really? I have not heard this. So they made the announcement, didn't tell the foreign players or something. And then he rescinded on the announcement and came back to the team. So that was the last year. I kind of figured that was.
So the new manager is going to be apparently Kazuo Matsui, who's currently their farm manager in his second year as farm manager.
So interesting choice. Yeah. Interesting choice.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy because he's really, really smart for a high school, for a guy who never got, didn't get past high school. He's fairly smart, but he's also got a little of this, when you talk to him, he'll tell you things about himself that maybe he doesn't want you to think are his story. So he'll talk about his time. We talked about his time in the majors, and he's going like, yeah, this happened to a friend. This happened to a friend of mine who happened to be in the majors. You know, this happened to him. It wasn't me. It's weird.
Dude, when you were in the majors, there weren't that many other dudes who were there with you. So it's like, what are we doing here?
He'd be the guy calling in the radio talk show talking about, yeah.
A friend of a friend.
Yeah, my friend who was in the majors told me.
My cousin's friend.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's interesting. That's a good call, though. I like that. I think we're going to have to get some new managerial blood out there. And I always have talked about in the past on the show about how it seems like Japan is reluctant to give the reins to some of the younger guys who are just out of the game to develop them as managers, because you need to do that. And Arai is going to take over the carp, having never coached even. So you have some risk there, obviously, because you're having a guy go out. I'm not saying that he's actually going to walk out to the mound, but he's going to be making the final decisions on when to take pitchers out, when to pinch hit guys. And, you know, guys are coming out of games. And we heard from Alex Ramirez that when you develop a relationship with these players, they kind of expect to play or expect not to be taken out or have expectations because they think you're friends with them. And that's where Arai is coming from. He's not coming from a coaching standpoint. So that's going to be interesting. I think with Matsui, obviously he has the coaching experience now, so that's not going to be new for him, but it is going to be on this level. And it's different when you have to answer so many questions after games.
Yeah, well, he's pretty much used to that stuff by now. And the other thing is, of course, I absolutely love, I should actually look here and see what he did on the minor leagues as a manager, his success. He was, this year he finished 5th in the seven team Eastern League. And then last year he was last. Now, okay, that's not a great recommendation, but one of the things I love about hiring the minor league manager is he knows the guys who will give him 100% on the minor league. He knows what they can do. He probably has a really good idea about the adjustments they need to make and whether they're confident enough to go through the failure that he can make a commitment to them. And then also guys who've managed in the minors, even with other teams, like Hatsuhiko Tsuji was a successful minor league manager with the Chunichi Dragons. These guys have that little extra step that sometimes the other skippers don't have. So I'm big on that one. And so I like that. Of course, that's one of my big things, but I think he'll do well enough.
I do too.
I like Arai, and I hope he does well.
Yeah, me too. And then the Giants, Tatsunori Hara, I think signed a 3-year contract. That was last year. And so he's still in the mid contract. And
yeah, that was funny. He said he
will not be leaving. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he didn't have to leak a message saying he was open to a second year.
Right.
But the Giants did say, interestingly enough, just having a contract isn't enough. Just having a 3-year contract doesn't mean you're going to be here for 3 years.
Yeah, don't get too comfortable, buddy. But some of his coaches are not comfortable at all because they're gone, about 6 of them. And we did hear that Dave Okubo's name had been bandied about as being hitting coach. So look for that. That's another voice on Pro Yaku News that my wife dislikes. So she will be rooting for that.
I like Dave personally, but yeah, I won't miss him on the TV.
And yeah, before we got on mic, we said hitting coach could be.
Yeah, okay.
Have some different meanings.
Indeed.
Yeah, don't hit your players, Dave. Don't hit your players.
We don't want to hear everybody saying, hold my beer or anything. No.
Okay. Now, listen to Jim and listen to listeners. We had some other things that we were going to discuss on the show, but my goodness, how time flies. We really need to go since we had a long interview. So we will get to those things, if that's okay, Jim, next week.
That's fine with me because I was hoping to allude to them, but we'll see if they bear any allusion moving forward into the next week.
I believe we're going to have some, we'll at least be able to talk about it after the games, and that should be fun. So look forward to that. And our high heat as well. We have a few questions on deck that we will get to. So probably no guests next week, although I will try to get a guest. So I'm going to work at it, but we'll see how that goes. But thank you very much for listening. Anybody who has a question, comment, criticism, or anything you want to tell us, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email. And we do have an MP3 question that we're going to have. Hopefully we can address that next week. But send MP3s or any other form of questions to via email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your postseason.
See you at the postseason ballparks, kids.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.